Hey, come on, Jonathan. How can you say that you're the greatest? I was preaching for years before you even got started.
Yeah, sure. But where did you go on your mission trip? Mississippi? I mean, you didn't even leave the country. Can you even find Kenya on a map? Get real, Chris. Do you really think that you're the greatest?
Well, I won't say I'm the greatest because that's not how I roll. But if someone else says it, I will not deny the truth because lying is a sin.
Whoa. Hey, Chris, did you already hit the record button?
Heyo, red light is on. Okay, it is go time. Where's the music? Did you hear the music? What chapter are we on? 18,
no.
18, right? We're on for 18.
All right, chapter 18. Okay, all right, let's do this.
Quiet on set.
Welcome to Through the Word. Here you are on a journey through the entire Bible, one chapter at a time. Today, Chris Nagum and Jonathan Ferguson guide us through the Gospel of Matthew. Now, here's my dad.
Chapter 18 is all about how we should act in the family of God, and it starts off with a couple of brothers fighting. Verse 1. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And Jesus decides to use this question as a starting point for a sermon about being part of God's family. Verse 3. And he said, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven."
I'm amazed sometimes at how many times the disciples argued over who's the greatest. I mean, do these guys get this at all? But then I remember what an idiot I've been in all of my stupid pride, and not just for silly opening banter. So Jesus teaches all of us that to be part of the family of God, we must become like a child. It's not just childlike faith, but childlike humility. The greatest would be the most humble. To be like a child is to be completely dependent upon him.
Jesus then teaches us about how we should dwell with one another in the family of God. Verse 6, "If anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea." Now, as members of the family, we're to protect one another. There are enough temptations in the world already. We don't want our lives to add any more to it. We need to make sure that we're helping, not hurting each other.
And Jesus goes on in verse 12 to tell one of his most beautiful parables. It's a story about a man who loses a sheep. He owns 100, and he loses just one. But he leaves the 99 sheep and goes and looks for the one that is lost. He searches high and low until it is found, and then he rejoices. He found the sheep. In verse 14, "In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should perish." Do not miss the power of this parable. Jesus is showing us the very nature of God's heart. God cares about the one lost sheep. God cares. Understand, that's a revolutionary concept to most cultures, that God cares, and he calls us to care about the last and the least. Your Father, your dad in heaven, is not willing that any of these little ones should be lost. And that should change the way you treat people. And in the very next verse, it changes how you treat a brother who hurts you. So Jonathan, what do we do when they hurt us?
Jesus focuses on restoration. In verses 15 to 20, Jesus lays out four steps that we should do in trying to bring back a brother or sister who's fallen into sin. And the first step is private correction. Verse 15. "If your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault, just between the two of you. If they listen to you, you have won them over. If we see a fellow believer in sin, we're to talk about it, but only with them. And notice this, if you see your brother sinning, you are the one responsible to go and correct it. You don't even need to share this with your pastor at this stage."
And if they listen, awesome. But if not, verse 16. "But if they will not listen, take one or two others along, so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses." So Jesus says, go back to the person, but not alone this time. The idea here is bring close friends who care, avoiding the massive intervention. The goal is to bring in a few people that can bring clarity to the situation, add a little perspective so that it's not just you against them. three people establishes a testimony that needs to be heard.
Verse 17 gives us the next two steps. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. At this step, the circle of involvement is widening greatly. It is made public to the body of believers what is happening. Now, this sounds embarrassing and unloving, but actually it is showing great love. Now, the entire church will be able to pray for that person and help lead them back to the right path. If, however, they still do not repent, then Jesus shares the fourth step, expelling the sinner. If they refuse to listen even to the church, treat them as you would a pagan or a tax collector. In other words, treat him as if he was not part of the family. That person must be expelled from the church.
Now, I gotta say, this is the hard part. I mean, it sounds pretty harsh. Kick them out of church? Treat them like a tax collector? Don't we want them in church so they can heal? So can you explain to us how kicking someone out of church is actually helpful?
Sin is like a cancer. It spreads quickly. By kicking an unrepentant sinner out, we protect the other believers from falling into the same sins as the offender. But it's also good for them, too. It is after being expelled that the person might realize the great height from which he has fallen and cry out to God to save him. 1 Corinthians 5 shows that Paul commanded a sinner to be expelled from the church there. And in 2 Corinthians 2, we see that same offender fully repentant, asking to be restored back into fellowship. Restoration was happening.
Now, friends, this is not easy, but it is love. And remember, Jesus said treat them like a sinner, which is to love them as a sinner, because they are. We love sinners, but we don't pretend that they're good with God. That's not love. Treat them like the loving Father treats the prodigal. Let them go so that they can come back. Faithful are the wounds of a true friend who loves you enough not to pretend.
Verse 19 is another one of these verses that's so often taken out of context. Again, truly I tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything they ask for, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. This is not a verse that teaches that all we need to do is find another believer who agrees with us, and instantly we will have all of our prayers answered. In context, Jesus was just talking about when two or three believers confront a brother who's in sin. What he's saying is that we have the full support of Jesus when we confront sin together. He's encouraging us to go forward, for he will be with us. Verse 20, for when two or three gather in my name, there am I with them.
So what you're saying is I shouldn't try to talk you into telling God that he has to give us a Ferrari?
No.
Okay, scratch that. Confrontation of sin is not easy, but it is love. But if it's not done with love, now that's dangerous. So Jesus ends the chapter with a parable about passing on forgiveness. God forgave you a massive debt. We've been shown extravagant grace, God's favor poured out on undeserving, unrighteous sinners like you and me. When confronting, your goal must be forgiveness and restoration. Freely you have received forgiveness, so freely give it away.
Matthew 18, the family of the king, on Through the Word.
Join us next time on Through the Word as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. Start your own journey through the Bible with our web and mobile apps at throughtheword.org. Our apps are free, so tell a friend or listen or support it. So thanks for giving. Chris Langham is the founder for Through the Word. Jonathan Ferguson is a church planter, and I won't be Kenya. And he's my dad. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word. Can I listen to it?
Yeah, we'll listen to it now.
Okay.